Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are around the world. I am Crystal Rose Fricker with Pure Seed, and I have a special guest today on our Grass Clippings podcast. Justin Balich is here. He's actually in London, but he's with us today. He is Pure Seed's national sales manager, but also an independent contractor for the NFL and the MLB. So, Justin, what's happening in London?
Well, we just finished up one NFL game a few days ago, which was played at Tottenham Stadium. And we've got another game coming up in just a couple of days this Sunday. That will be the Jaguars versus the Bears. Last game was Jets
Wow.
and Vikings. Yeah.
Well, and you were in Brazil not too long ago. What is the goal with the NFL and some of these more international sites for football games?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the NFL wanting to broaden their viewership, their fan bases. The NFL teams have some roots in some of these other countries, very similar to the way that the NBA branched out from the US and played games in other countries and introducing the game to the younger athletes or younger generations. Same way that they interact with the communities or their home sites, they're starting to do that on the international platform. And I think we've seen that in soccer, where soccer has become so widely, exciting in the US and more options to watch soccer than just international teams coming into play. So with the NFL going to Brazil and London and Frankfurt and Munich and Mexico City, and soon to expand to additional countries and cities, it's really about creating that worldwide effect opposed to just that national base in the US.
Very cool, because we always say American football, and as you say, soccer is just so everywhere around the world that has grown so much. So the value of this increasing followers for football, I think, is pretty cool. What goes along with that? Some of the difficulties or challenges that the folks are having in these new venues internationally, if anything?
Yeah, so from my observations, I mean, you can imagine there's very few American football stadiums worldwide, but there are football or soccer pitches worldwide, and there's a lot of them that everybody's heard about, or some of us have traveled to in our time with Pure Seed to consult on the grounds. And these soccer pitches obviously have home teams in most cases and are utilized year-round for soccer matches. And then the NFL comes in and would like to host an NFL game, and the dimensions of the field are slightly different, and the requirements for equipment, a goal post, a field goal net, sideline equipment, all those new aspects to the field preparation are added to the stadium's requirements of what they need to supply to host an NFL game at their facility. And so it's really, in my travels and my observations of these facilities, it's really interesting to see how excited the stadiums get in regards to hosting these events because it's so unique. Many times, first time that they've ever played an NFL game in one of these facilities. In Brazil, first time an American football game had been played in Brazil, and it ended up in São
Wow.
Paulo. So,
Cool. Well, so are these fields or venues, are they all natural turf? Are some of them artificial turf? And do they have to have a quick turnaround or a lot of games or events? How does that come into play?
yeah, so the majority of the fields, São Paulo, Brazil, for instance, is natural turf. It's a cool season turf with a hybrid stitch system that I believe went in 2014 before FIFA World Cup. And the stadium was built for that. When you come over to London for Tottenham, that's the stadium here was built for both soccer matches for the Tottenham Hotspurs and for the NFL. The NFL collaborated on the build. So there is a soccer pitch that is natural turf that retracts similar to a style of stadium at Allegiant Stadium for the Las Vegas Raiders or the Arizona Cardinals at State Farm Stadium, where the field actually moves out, and then you're left with essentially a concrete floor that a artificial turf field is utilized here in London. Now, when they go over to Wembley Stadium, there's a third game in 2 weeks. That field is natural turf as well. So there's, I would say, predominantly on the international side, more natural turf facilities that you come across. I think that that would be pretty obvious to most folks when you get into the FIFA World Cup. They require fields to be natural turf and not to play on artificial.
Yeah. Cool. I think that personally, to me, the future is going to be more natural turf, but we still have to understand how to work in these different venues and all the different things that have to happen between natural and artificial, example, the cleats the athletes use. What are some of the innovative tactics or things that the NFL is doing to help prepare these fields that are kind of unique that would be interesting to our listeners?
Yeah, I think the planning, most people wouldn't view it this way in regards to the planning could start 12 months, 24 months in advance, or if it's a repeat facility, then you know, there's a little less planning that needs to happen. But for an initial site like a Sao Paulo, Brazil, there's a year in advance of planning and site visits. And Nick Pappas, who leads all grounds for international NFL international games and for the NFL Super Bowl in the States, he consults on those fields and works with the grounds crews that are local to that facility in understanding what will they do to prep the field in advance of that NFL game. And in addition to what soccer matches do they have leading up to? Is there a requirement for a resodding? Can you resod? You know, with a stitch system, you can't resod. You can reseed or you can interseed. So there's there's variables that play into it, similar to the way that we have in the States with multiple events with some of our partners that we work with on sports fields. And you know, it depends on the cool season, warm season grass, availability to sod in those markets if needed. For instance, in a Mexico City, when we've been there previously, I haven't been there in about 2 years, but they're natural turf and sod farms aren't exactly readily available. So you're working with the turf that that you have currently and trying to manage it all the way up to the NFL game.
So with all these events on these venues and being in different parts of the world, How do you guys handle the equipment or the resources, getting things there that you need if they're not in country, et cetera?
Well, that can be difficult depending on what location you're talking about. And in some instances, they're in an initial site that hasn't hosted a game. There's a number of pieces of equipment that get shipped over from the U.S. and to that site, to essentially build up the resources that are there in anticipation of doing additional games. There's also local distribution that might be needed because there's different requirements or restrictions on certain products that we might use in the U.S. that could be used in those other countries, or labeling differences or style of equipment might not be readily available. So using the local resources and distribution, and then also the shipping, similar to the way we do on the seed side of things, and using trucks across the country or shipping seed over the oceans. Similar aspect of shipping tons of equipment over. There's also the aspect of the preparation of the field in São Paulo, Brazil. There was a soccer match before the NFL game. Then there was an NFL game 4 days later. And then after that game, there was another soccer match 4 days later. So using paints that are chalk-based that might wash out a little bit easier, being considerate both on the front end. I began observing and seeing what Nick Pappas has done. There's a lot of care for how the field is left for the team and the groundskeepers post-event as well, which I think is really incredible. And it takes consideration because you're putting a different level of traffic on a field that in a lot of instances hasn't been seen before. Obviously, you can't mimic a football game compared to a soccer match. I think the only thing that maybe correlates slightly is maybe a rugby match or something like that. So the traffic aspect, you do a lot of this in your research, in your trialing of varieties, different species. How well does it traffic? I think it plays the same of, how do you mimic that style of traffic depending upon the type of sport that is being played on the field?
Now that kind of leads me to my next question. I was wondering about, safety for the athletes and the different types of fields and what things are being done or is there research happening to make sure we have ideal conditions for our athletes?
Yeah, the fields get tested, especially for NFL, before any NFL game each week. There's also the NFLPA, a close friend and partner of Pure Seeds, John Sorokin, has done a number of trials for us at the University of Tennessee, observes those tests prior to game day and even on game day, and that gets recorded and reported so that there is a consistency across, all of those playing surfaces, whether they're domestic or home stadiums, or whether they're neutral site to a degree because they're an international facility.
Yeah, we really enjoy working with Dr. Sorokin and just trying to find better varieties, better products that I think make a difference for the end user, in this case being an athlete. So that's super important to me as well. I think a lot of people out there that are learning more about sports surfaces and what goes into making those. So that's one of the reasons I was really interested in talking to you today to get kind of this behind the scenes view, if you. We had the benefit of being able to work with the FIFA World Cup in Qatar, and so I have that knowledge in terms of the consistency that they were doing between the fields that were planted and used and the practice fields. But with the NFL, is there anything that they're doing with their practice fields and these different fields to try and provide some kind of consistency for the players?
Yeah, there's definitely oversight by the same team that manages the main stadium facility and grounds that happens at those practice facilities. And typically teams are in town for such a short period that it's really maybe for a one practice, one walkthrough. They're typically not there for, extended periods of time unless it's a carryover like the Jacksonville Jaguars, where they come over to London and they play one game and then stay for a second game. And they're a unique situation because of their ownership living in London. So they they play in that second game into their season each year, it seems like. But yeah, the practice facilities are under a similar scrutiny of those main playing surfaces or game day playing surfaces. And I think that you bring up a critical point of these players spend a detailed amount of time or a smaller amount of time on their game fields in relationship to their practice facilities. And so the practice facilities are, whether it's these international sites or whether they're at home, at their home practice facilities, there's the quantity of time that is spent on practice facilities compared to the 17 or 20 or whatever number of games that they end up playing throughout each season, pending their success. They're on their practice facilities way more than these game facilities. So very important to keep the consistency across whether you're in practice mode or whether you're in game mode.
Yeah, for sure. What about long-term effects? Like, I think of the Olympics. This is making me think of the Olympics anyway, where, you know, different countries and specialists are coming together to make a better venue for the athletes. Are there any long-term effects that you're seeing or you think will happen by this combination of the NFL being in different areas around the world?
I think it'll just grow the game, to be honest with you. I think from the field preparation standpoint, I think it's amazing the group that travels around with the NFL and Nick Pappas and that gets to see how other facilities do it, and they learn from each other. And whether that's the group from the NFL teaching the host site something or in reverse. And I think over here in Europe, there is a lot of preventative maintenance practices or turf management practices that are slightly different than what you would do in the U.S. And that might be based off of restrictions of products or restrictions of equipment. So I think it's really interesting. You know, the sports turf managers get to learn about this via social media and YouTube videos and other panel interviews and such, but getting to see it and they share their experiences with their colleagues and their counterparts, everybody's kind of in the same realm of we want to manage turf at the highest level, produce the best product. And I think we've seen that across all sport, you know, whether that's golf, football, soccer, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of where we are in the world today. We are able to be in touch with each other better and network and learn, but really it isn't just all on the internet or social media. It's actually going there, being there, interacting together, seeing the venue, I think, and for you probably seeing the grass and the knowledge that you have working for a grass seed company, but then taking what you learn there and kind of melding those together. Has that been beneficial for you?
Yeah, immensely. I mean, when I've worked with some of, I refer to them as friends in the industry domestically in the U.S. and be able to share some experiences of what I've observed at these international events, it certainly helps to share those experiences and to be able to talk face to face with folks and find out, you know, why they do it a certain way. And even the most recent, I would say, more innovative product that's come to the U.S. is Stitchgrass, of a hybrid system. And it's not meant for every, you know, facility, but it also leads back to your research, pure seed testing and pure seed, and how our varieties, what variables would be at play against some of our varieties when it's next to a plastic fiber or, you know, a hybrid fiber. And is there, you know, a drought tolerant variety, a Tuaca variety, Doesn't have its same drought tolerance next, in a canopy that has, X number of fibers per square inch.
Exactly. That to me is super interesting. I mean, my travels around the world, the different sports arenas that I've got to visit with live grass, the issues are usually different diseases. Of course, it has to perform under the traffic, and then maybe reduced light can be another factor. So we work on shade tolerance as well as resistance to rust and gray leaf spot, which can be a severe problem under these heavy impact sports fields that have low light, and they really have them maintained at a high level. But sometimes when we have things maintained at a high level, it can set it up for more disease pressure. So I think that by interacting internationally, we really can get the best of all our worlds to have the solutions that we need. But what do you see as some of the needs in terms of the products being used, or the grasses, the seed that they're putting on the fields? Is there anything that you learned that way?
I think it's more accessibility. The seed companies that are based in Oregon have done a good job on distribution and getting the varieties out there. I think it's more of and the explanation of what varieties would suit that situation best. I think there is a little bit of a battle between research and marketing, and what the difference is between those two, and really being able to demonstrate. I think we've seen this. You and I have collaborated on trials that we have varieties in Oregon, and we've planted some trials in Arizona where I reside. And some of those varieties have risen above the others, where maybe in Oregon they weren't the best fit. They maybe didn't rank as high in Oregon as they did in Arizona. So I think each individual situation has so many variables at play that understanding your water, your soil, your fertility program is critical to selecting the right type of species, but also the right varieties that would be in that blend as well. So I think from a distribution standpoint, we can only grow and continue to reach different markets. And as these sports continue to grow and more facilities are built, the only thing I wish we could do is reduce canopies or covers over stadiums a little bit more, but obviously there's a fan experience there as well. But I think if you were to ask sports turf managers, they would ask for a little bit more sunlight on the field because of the shade issues that do, come with certain buildings and types. And, we dealt with that just recently with the USC and our partnership with the LA Coliseum, and they built a brand new press box and suites on the south side of the building. And that's now caused a shade line to go from 10 feet onto the field to almost to the bottom of the numbers for a USC game. And Scott Leupold has had to battle. We've tried a number of different products and done some trials there to see what would suit him best. And so it really comes down to the superintendent, the groundskeeper, really has to also buy into being a researcher as well. Right? There's not a fix it cure all product. You got to find the right varieties, the right product that fits your variables.
Exactly. I think it's maybe an interesting analogy would be like a fine wine, like understanding the differences between wines, and some of that is each person's palate. But in this case, it's each superintendent or sports field manager's needs, the types of varieties that he needs, the species that he needs, for the things we've been discussing. I mean, mildew is another problem in the shade. It adds a whole nother level of disease pressure when there's less light. And so we really all have to be able to share information, share our data, share the wisdom that we've learned by traveling around the world and working on these different projects to help sports field managers find the best wine or the best grass seed for their venue for success that's pleasing to everyone. And so to me, we need a little wine tasting, maybe, to identify some of these grasses. So that's why we do trials everywhere so that people can get a taste of what our products are like. And 9 times out of 10, maybe even 10 out of 10, I'd say once they try a good, solid genetic product, they're like, wow, that makes a difference. Now I don't have to water as much. I don't need as many fungicides, or it will actually take the traffic. And so the researchers that are spending millions of dollars to develop these varieties, we need to move past just the development part, and we need to, in my opinion, do what you're doing and interact with those people using the products and help them understand the differences of our wines, if you will, the differences in our grasses and how to use them properly and the best ways to maintain and use those grasses. Because once they do that, it's like night and day in the terms of the surface for the athlete. As you, I think, have seen at some of the Super Bowl events or different events where things are handled different ways, we get different results, right?
Absolutely. And I think you, I like your analogy of the wine because you could drink five different cabs and only find one that you enjoy, right? That suits your palate. So a very similar concept of their each individual site is similar to each individual. It has its own environmental variables that are at play. So, without trialing and testing new products or new varieties, it's very difficult to decide what is the best product. And I find that you and I have these conversations, the rest of our sales team and the company, when we interact with customers or distributors and they ask for our recommendation, what's your best variety? Our question or our response typically isn't with the name of a variety. Or we answer a question with a question, unfortunately, which, most people say don't do that. But there's the aspect of we need more information. What are you dealing with? What type of water do you have? What soil conditions do you have? What sunlight conditions do you have? We want to interact more and understand the environment that it would be going into because that might change our opinion on what is our number one ranking for that situation, right?
Yeah, it's like also making the correct blend. These days, most people like to use blends because they get the benefits of different varieties. So to me, that's like a red blend. Maybe you need a blend of reds to get that perfect performance or perfect taste. Unfortunately, we have a lot of different varieties that go into our blends that perform well. So gray leaf spot resistant ryegrasses and drought tolerant ryegrasses and bluegrasses that can perform in the shade. And that's why I think it's important to work with universities and do trials. And now we're not just doing universities, we're working with FIFA and STRI and different organizations like that that are helping with this trialing. So to me, that's like going to a winery and having a taste of the wine. You go to a different research facility and see how things are performing, or just look at the data and see. And then together we can put together the ultimate products that I think will make a big difference for the guys and gals using these fields.
Yeah, and you bring up an interesting point there with college football making a change to a new playoff system that proposes that some sites might have to host a game in December. And some there was a growing trend, I would say, over the last 3 to 5 years of a dormant field finishing off the season, maybe the last two games of the season. And some of those universities overseeding their football fields because the benefit just wasn't there for based off of schedule. And now with a schedule changing to where they are playing deeper into December, similar to an NFL schedule, that overseeding really kind of comes back into fruition for a lot of these universities that maybe haven't had to overseed for the past number of years, and playing in different conditions that some of these sports turf managers aren't necessarily used to. And most of them won't find out that they're going to play a home game until very late in the season. So you have to prepare in, you know, obviously, depending on where it's at, most likely in October, maybe even earlier, before you get to that December game.
Yeah, that is so tough because you have shorter growing degree days that really affect the growth of grass. Because of the research, I do feel like we've come a long way in finding things that are better adapted to do that. I mean, I saw some of the trials at University of Tennessee when I went to the FIFA conference there, and you know, they're growing grass inside and subjecting it to different levels of light and finding out what works and what doesn't. And that's the main thing to me in our analogy with wine. You can have a good wine or a bad wine, and it makes all the difference in your meal. In this case, if you use bad grass, it means more fungicides, more effort, less dense turf, less traffic, you know, tolerance. So it's all the difference in the game. It's all the difference in what happens on that field and maybe even the outcome of the game, for sure, for athletes' well-being and less injuries. So I just think that this has been such a fun thing to do with you today, Justin.
Yeah, it's been
sharing
awesome.
What you've been learning, because it really helps myself and I think other folks in the industry and maybe some of those folks that don't know that much about what goes behind the scenes with grass seed and turf and these venues. We need to interact. We need to learn more. We need to share what we know, because that's how we're going to get better and keep our industry relevant and into the future. Because I do see that more and more people are wanting to play on live grass, and that's very possible with all the things that everyone is doing, from the farmer all the way to the sports turf manager. There's a lot going into making grass seed and grass perform at its ultimate best. And we're a part of that. And that's exciting to me to be a part of that. And all our listeners, I would just encourage you to listen to more things like this and delve in to see what you can learn and understand about what's going on today. Because so much money, time, energy, and research has been gone, put into grass that the average person doesn't realize happens. But it's pretty cool, and we call some of those folks of us that are in this turf geeks. But once you get into it, I think you realize it is important. It makes a difference, and that's why we're in this business. And to me, that's very exciting, and that's the reason to keep going for the future, because I think we can make a difference for others. And I just really appreciate your time. And is there any other things that I didn't ask you that you want to bring up today?
Well, talking about turf geeks, I was walking by Buckingham Palace yesterday, and I think I took more photos of the grass outside of Buckingham Palace than I did of the actual palace. So, yeah, I think if you're a turf nerd, turf geek, whatever you want to call us, I think it's pretty easy to find us. If there's a patch of grass somewhere, so we're probably standing there staring at it. And if it was the group of us traveling together, we would probably all be taking a look at it. There was one area that got heavily trafficked. I'm assuming that's where people stand and, you know, watch as whatever happens outside the Buckingham Palace. It's just one of those things where I think as we travel around and even around these facilities, there's ancillary grass areas that aren't the playing surface. They get utilized for other aspects of these events that is really interesting as well and really challenging for those host sites, whether they're covered with an event flooring and left on for 4 or 5 days and then heavy equipment driven on them, or large stages built on top of them and stuff like that. There's so much that goes into some of these events that is even just outside that playing surface. And the natural grass facilities or natural grass that's around these facilities gets a similar level of care and critique as well, because it's the front door is when everybody walks up to your house. And if you've got grass in your front yard, most of us that love dealing with turf and seed and what have you probably spend a good amount of time manicuring our lawns. And it's for that, realtors call it curb appeal and we call it the walk-up appeal. We want people to walk past beautiful, lush grass.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Grass just adds so much, not just for sports turf, but the other events that happen in facilities. And to me, grass is a happy place. If you think of all the things that happen on grass, picnics, parks, cemeteries, maybe not so much. We do collect grasses everywhere we go, and there are some cool grasses in cemeteries, but it's wherever grass survives and can adapt that it makes a difference. And that's basically all the researchers and breeders are doing, is taking the best grasses that survive under different environments and getting that to a farmer so he can produce a seed so then we can use it out in the real world. And that to me is an exciting thing, and just been a pleasure visiting with you today, Justin, and look forward to the next grass clippings. Thank you all for joining. We'd love for you to follow us, because there's going to be some future episodes you won't want to miss. We've got some exciting topics we want to discuss and delve into deeper, really cool guests coming. Stay in touch with us on social media, share the love, because this is what we need to do as an industry, is really reach out to each other and follow and learn more. So thank you again for being with us today.